Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 190th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at SoccerNewsDay.com. If you have a question for me, of course, the chat room is open. I'll try to answer to the best of my abilities. If you have a question amongst yourselves, you know, go ahead and have a chat, whatever. And all I can say is that we're getting closer and closer now as we finish off the month of April. The World Cup is almost upon us. Of course, it all starts June 12th. You can catch every game on ESPN. And as always, you can come here if you don't want to follow the ESPN coverage post-games. You can come to the 14th Fire American Soccer Show as we will be having post-game shows, review shows on every single day scheduled for the World Cup. Join me every day and hope, along with my panel, selected guests as well, to discuss these games. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, joining me will be from World Soccer Talk, Carter Krishnire. He'll be my co-host as we discuss everything that's going on with the World Cup. And you know what? It's going to be full of action, full of promise. I want to talk about right now two instances that happened over the weekend. One of them was in Sacramento, and the other one in Miami with the House of CONCACAF, and we'll get to that in a minute. Congratulations to the Sacramento Republic of the USL Pro League. Opening match, full house, home opener, full house over in Sacramento for American soccer. I am truly happy to see that. Will I expect full houses these next several home games? To be honest, I don't know. All I can say is I believe soccer has made it in Sacramento. Great job by Sacramento for filling in the stadium. And I'm hoping and praying that whether there is starting of construction of a stadium, I really am excited and happy that the game is in Sacramento, and I'm very, very excited to say that I think it was a great location for the game to make its move, whether it be amateur, semi-professional, or in the professional league. It doesn't matter. USL Pro, NESL, MLS, the game is in Sacramento now, and welcome aboard. I hope you guys have a great time and you make American soccer fans proud. That's all I ever want. That's all I want to see. The game is going to do well there in Sacramento, and I believe in that. That is the truth. Congratulations, Sacramento, California. You've done us proud supporting the game here in this country. Now, let's go to a situation where you have to say is a good one, and I'm talking about what President Jeffrey Webb of CONCACAF is doing. The Gold Cup is the premier tournament in this confederation of North America, Central America, and the Caribbean. And while I understand there are some teams that are not at the level of where the U.S. and Mexico are, and probably not the level of where some of the top Central American teams like Costa Rica, Honduras, Panama being an up-and-coming power is becoming, it is great to hear. And it's great to see President of CONCACAF, Jeffrey Webb, saying we want to move the tournament around. Now, my opinion of this, I have said many, many times, whether it's been on this show, talking with fans, talking with fellow media members, I understand why it's been held every single tournament in the United States. It's more for financial reasons. Yes, we have the stadiums to hold big, big fans, you know, of these nations like Mexico, like our own, Canada, the Central American countries, the Caribbean nations. Only fair and fitting when CONCACAF becomes a real confederation in world football, world soccer, that we need to spread the wealth here. We need to allow these nations, whether they're big or small, to have the CONCACAF Gold Cup as a host. And I applaud Jeffrey Webb for not only making this move, be made, but I applaud him for standing up and saying the only reason why it was done in the United States is because of cash. The money flows here in the U.S. And that's what it was, a cash grab for CONCACAF, because they knew having it here, because they're going to play it in the NFL stadiums and a few stadiums that are meant for soccer that are hosting MLS clubs, that was a given. And you know what? That's fine. Mexico co-hosted it twice. They were never the full hosts. And if it has to go to Mexico for one tournament, that's fine. I don't mind it. Does it mean Canada will get an opportunity? Absolutely. Canada deserves an opportunity to host the Gold Cup. Now, whether it's going to be at Stade Saputo, don't think it might happen there. I believe it's probably going to go to the Olympic Stadium. I think the Canadian Football League stadiums, obviously Vancouver's BC Place will probably be another venue. I don't think you're going to have it in Rogers Centre unless you have an event where or if the Blue Jays are going to be on a long road trip. Then I could see Rogers Center hosting a couple of Gold Cup tournament games. If not, it's going to go to BMO Field. But obviously, you know, Edmonton deserves an opportunity. Calgary deserves an opportunity. But once again, I want to see this happen. And at the same time, you're seeing these nations in Central America, like a Panama, like a Costa Rica, building brand new national team stadiums for these games. And you know what? Maybe this could force some of these countries in the Central American region to maybe build another brand new facility, so at least you wouldn't have to waste or abuse the natural grass surfaces to having too many games every single day. And you know what? I don't mind. I think this is a great idea by Jeffrey Webb to tackle it. I think this is a great idea by CONCACAF to finally give every other nation from within its borders of where they are zoned. The North America zone gets more opportunities with Canada and Mexico. The Central zone gets an opportunity for first-time hosts. Where in the Caribbean can they host, or do they have the stadium ability to host the tournament? Because as we all know, there's the national stadium in Jamaica. I don't know the office. I don't know if there's another stadium that can handle this sort of thing. But you know what? If it forces the Jamaican Football Federation to construct another stadium to do so, then you know what? So be it. They got to do it. Trinidad Tobago has their national stadium. I know a couple of times they've played on cricket grounds, but the same argument. If there's enough room to build another stadium in Trinidad and Tobago, go ahead and do it. You'll probably get the money. You'll probably have support from Jeffrey Webb to help these nations do something. Let me tell you, I am in favor of this. I am in favor of the Gold Cup being moved around by CONCACAF to give some of these nations an opportunity to go out there. Heck, why not put it in Puerto Rico? Why not give that island an opportunity to do something? Because if you are going to show the same time, not just to show, but to give these countries that never qualify either through the UNCAF tournament or the Caribbean Cup tournament for the Gold Cup, you give them at least the automatic spot as a host. And as I've said, this would be a perfect thing. This would be a perfect thing to happen, and it would probably give our confederation a little more credibility. Jeffrey Webb so far, in my opinion, is the man at this moment to take away all the negativity that Jack Warner has done in world football for CONCACAF. There are probably still some underhanded people out there that we don't know about, or if we do know about, they haven't been tagged yet. But so far, I think Jeffrey Webb has done a brilliant job of taking away the shame and being humiliated by what Jack Warner has done with CONCACAF. Jeffrey Webb so far has done a very good job. And I applaud Jeffrey Webb. I think he'll make an excellent president of this confederation for a while, depending on how long he wants to stay with CONCACAF as their president. And all I can say is I applaud him for the hard work he has done to right this ship. I think he's been opened. I think he's been very transparent. I think right now he has done a very good job with what's been going on with CONCACAF. You can't complain about the World Cup qualifying in the final round, basically, of what's happened. I mean, we've had great, great drama in World Cup qualifying. I think CONCACAF right now has done an excellent job with how to get everything going and to finally stabilizing the situation that we have here. And all I can say is, and once again, all I can say is this, it's just been a breath of fresh air about how this confederation is becoming bigger and better with a good man at the helm. Truly believe, and I'm hoping at the same time, that CONCACAF will be a good power when it comes to World Cups, as well as the Club World Cup, hopefully the USA finally sending an MLS team to go to these Club World Cup tournaments and finally winning the trophy for the first time in the Confederation's history. Excuse me. Ladies and gentlemen, I got a great show for you tonight. Joining me later, which will be a taped interview, is Mr. Leander Charlatkins and his opinion article with Fox Sports and their soccer segment, their soccer department inside MLS, talking about the problem with New York City FC, of course, playing their first season at Yankee Stadium in a baseball stadium. NASL segment will recap the week that is and was, and then, of course, next week, the Red Bulls in the hour, in the second hour, of course, the 1-1 draw against Columbus over at Cruz Stadium. Joining me right now, a gentleman that probably some of you have heard on this show in the past, as well as one of the members of New England Soccer Today, because we're here to talk about the 2014 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Round one starts Wednesday, May 7th. Brian O'Connell from New England Soccer Today, covering the New England Revolution, anything soccer-related in the New England area. Brian, how are you? And welcome aboard.
Hey, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem at all, Brian. I got to tell you, we were all anxious, waiting and waiting and waiting, and finally U.S. Soccer and their committee has finally given us Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup dates and the setup. And isn't it funny? Because now it's the 101st tournament, obviously, but we're celebrating at the same time 100 years since 1914 that this tournament has been around.
Yeah, it's amazing to see. It's interesting to see how the sport has kind of, you know, grown over those years. And the one consistent that's always been there has always been the U.S. Open Cup. And you know, it's outlived, you know, numerous leagues and numerous, you know, forums. But you know, the tournament itself has always endured. It's always kind of been a presence on the soccer scene, whether it's small or big over the years. It's always endured. So it's a really a testament not only to the tournament itself, but to the people in this country, who've also, you know, the clubs and players and coaches and referees that have really, really kind of kept it together over those 100 years.
And you gotta say at the same time here that there are more clubs that want to be a part of this. Clubs, not just in MLS now, the NASL clubs want to be a part of it. The USL Pro clubs want to be a part of it. We all know about the PDL teams, the U.S. Adult Soccer Association teams, NPSL teams. And you just have to say that if there's so much love for these FA Cup type of tournaments, like what goes on in England and in Germany and Spain and Italy, it's got the same want and need here in the U.S. And that just makes me so happy to see all these teams finally warming up to this. It's just a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, and it's really it's great because I think what it's always offered is the opportunity to have the smaller dogs kind of, you know, upset the bigger dogs, so to speak. I mean, we saw it 2 years ago on that night where we saw Cal FC overtake the Portland Timbers. We saw Harrisburg City Islanders overtake the Revs. We saw the Railhawks overtake the Galaxy. So it's really an opportunity for especially a lot of these second and third division clubs to just say, hey, we want to show what we're made of, and the tournament is the perfect opportunity to do that. And as we've seen in the recent past, I mean, it does happen. You do see, you know, the Division II and Division III sides, you know, beat the MLS side. So it's, I mean, there's really nothing, as a fan and as somebody who follows soccer, there's really nothing that you cannot like about this tournament. It's just a fantastic tournament. And like you said, to see all these NPSL teams and the USL teams and the NASL teams really, really kind of, you know, make the investment and really make the effort to really kind of make their imprint on the tournament is just, you know, it just gains even more traction for the tournament's popularity.
Absolutely. And the one thing I love seeing is we already have the situation set up already for the first round proper, second round proper. We're seeing now a total of 80 amateur teams in below USL Pro League, which of course is third division in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing a grand total of 80 teams from all four regions of the U.S., all four conferences in the PDL, USASA, NPSL coming together, and just, wow, I'm so shocked to see U.S. soccer expanding the tournament. And I guess, I mean, I don't know how you would say this, but I guess we're finally seeing the U.S. Open Cup getting the respect that it deserves from within, because I'll admit this. I've said it's been treated like a bastard child, and not anymore.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I felt like there were times in which the tournament was kind of treated as if it was kind of really just an excuse for, you know, top division teams to just kind of, you know, throw out their reserves and to play, you know, PDL teams and second and third division teams. And, you know, a lot of MLS managers and coaches really didn't kind of give it more than that's what it was. It was just an opportunity for reserves and rookies and young players to get game minutes. But now you're seeing a lot of the second and third division and USASA teams really kind of take it to these the teams that are above them, and to see the interest grow year in and year out. And it's really a fantastic opportunity for these lower division teams to really kind of make it their own. And I think that's really where you're getting a lot of the push To expand the tournament is really at the USASA levels and at the PDL level and USL Pro and NASL. I mean, it's really them who are really saying, you know, we're going to take this seriously, and you know, we're going to treat this like it's a real like it deserves to be treated, like a bona fide national cup championship. And so it's wonderful to see, in addition to the sport growing, you know, at those levels, it's also great to see that at those levels, the tournament's being even more appreciated. So I think it's a nice kind of dynamic where you're seeing the sport grow, you know, at these lower divisions, and you're also seeing the interest in the tournament grow at those divisions. So it's really win-win for everyone.
Absolutely. Let's get into it right now. Let's go to your neck of the woods in the New England area.
Sure.
Round one, a couple of good New England sides. Obviously, that accounts of Connecticut, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. Greater Portland soccer team, the Portland Phoenix, will be in round one, starting off against the Lehigh Valley United Soccer Club in round one, along with looks like a big Massachusetts matchup with the Western Mass Pioneers against Mass Premier Soccer. Mass Premier Soccer coming from USASA Region 1, Western Mass Pioneers coming out of PDL. What is it about these two teams right now that you think is going to represent the New England area very well in round one before they move on to round two?
You know, I think the Portland Phoenix is really probably one of the strongest teams in PDL over the years. I think they came into formation about 2 or 3 years ago under the global Premier Soccer umbrella, if you will. And what they've really done is they've really fielded a very, very good team. And they were the first team from the state of Maine to actually enter the tournament. They actually entered it about 2 years ago. So to say, if we're talking about how much the popularity of the tournament has expanded, I mean, there's your proof right there. The very first team from Maine to enter the tournament happened 2 years ago when Portland Phoenix entered it and played against the Brooklyn Italians. So that's really something which kind of just speaks to the popularity, not only of the tournament itself, nationally, but also locally. So I think that's a fantastic thing for them. And it's something that they obviously take very, very seriously. And Portland Phoenix will certainly field a very, very strong team. And then while you have another PDL, a New England-based PDL team in the Western Mass Pioneers, they come from a very storied kind of tradition that actually goes back to the 1920s, 1930s. Their founders were the Gremio Lusitano Club, and I've been to the stadium, and I've met a lot of the front office personnel. They take this tournament very, very seriously. I actually was speaking to one of their directors, and they're taking this very, very seriously. So the Western Mass Pioneers is also another strong club. And they actually have played in the U.S. Open Cup 4 as well. So it'll be interesting to see. I actually have my eye on the Western Mass Pioneers Mass Premier game, because I think that's going to be a very interesting game, in the sense that Mass Premier right now at the USASA level is not only competing in this year's tournament, the 2014 tournament, they're also competing in the 2015 tournament, because qualifying for the 2015 tournament is also taking place pretty much right now as we speak. So it'll be interesting to see a side like Mass Premier Soccer competing in two tournaments, the same tournament in just different editions of the tournament. So that'll be a very interesting, very, very interesting game to watch as a spectator.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, I don't want to forget them. The Vermont Voltage will be on the road against the New York Red Bulls under-23 squad from the NPSL. Yep. They'll be playing at the Red Bulls training facility in Whippany, New Jersey. Got to say, this is the first time I've seen the Vermont Voltage, and if I'm wrong, you can correct me, but this is the first time I think for the Voltage they'll be in the Open Cup proper. Many times in the past when PDL had their qualifying games, Vermont's been there but just never able to get into round one.
Yeah, you're right. They, like a lot of other PDL sides in the past, have played in those quote-unquote playing games, and unfortunately for them, they hadn't entered the tournament proper. So you're right. This would be the first time, I believe, that they would be entering the tournament, the actual tournament itself, without having to play a play-in game, so to speak. So they're also a club that actually is the oldest New England-based PDL club in PDL. So it's a long time coming for them. It'll be a great game for them. I'm sure they're going to be very, very excited about playing, going down to New Jersey and playing, the Red Bulls, Red Bull U23s. So again, there's a lot of history in line with a lot of these clubs. A lot of these clubs really, really take tournaments seriously, and it's going to provide for some really, really fantastic games. For both sides, for partisans of both sides. I mean, you really can't go wrong with this slate of games.
No, you really can. And once again, here's the setup. We're going to have 8 games in round 1. GPS Portland Phoenix from Maine will take on Lehigh Valley United Sonic. Detroit City FC will host RWB Adria. Once again, West Mass Pioneers against the Mass Premier Soccer team. Red Bulls under 23 hosting Vermont Voltage. Colorado Rovers of the USSSA, so I don't make a tongue twister out of it, will host the Red Force from Florida. Well, you know just as well as I do, the U.S. Club Soccer and the USSSA, that's going to be a tongue twister for anyone to say if you go too fast. That's for sure. Yeah, definitely. Ventura County Fusion taking on Club Deportivo Aguileros, USA. The old San Diego Flash, run by Warren Barton, will take on the U.S. Club Soccer representative, which was today announced, Soccer Club Corinthians, USA. And then PSA Elite will be taking on the L.A. Misioneros. And then this is a great thing to see the USL Pro League teams joining in round 2 with the rest of the PDL and the USASA and the NPSL teams. 24 games, Brian. That's something I never thought we'd see. I mean, with the FA Cup, I never thought I'd see 24 games in a round proper.
Yeah, it's a fantastic development. And all credit due to U.S. Soccer for really expanding the tournament and really along to this, basically this feast of games for all these teams to kind of partake, because really at this level, I mean, this is really the time in which a lot of these clubs are really, really kind of sharpening their knives and getting ready for these games. And it's really going to provide for some fantastic soccer. You're going to see a lot of great soccer, pretty much from east to west, and a lot of diverse different clubs. I mean, it's really just kind of like a great showcase of where the state of soccer is in this country, is to be able to see this entire slate of games where I'm sure you don't have to go very, very far to find one of these games and to attend it. It's just a fantastic, fantastic development to see that the field has been expanded to provide all these games, not only next week, but the week after, like you had said, the 23 games that are lined up between a lot of the USL Pro and a lot of the NPSL and USASA side. So it's going to be a fantastic start to the tournament next week, and then it's just going to get even more interesting once we get into the second round, and then once we get into the third round, we're going to start seeing the MLS side. It's just going to be a fantastic tournament, and it's going to be even better than it's ever been.
Now, obviously, the one negative in this year's edition, we have to say it, unfortunately, there could be games played during the World Cup itself.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in the fourth round, the MLS teams that are going to be a part of this, that's the one negative. My problem is, and I don't know how you feel about it, but I felt MLS scheduling games on Wednesday, June the 11th, was a major no-no. They should have not scheduled any games. I know it's on the day just before the World Cup starts, but I felt that if you wanted to make sure that every team in MLS plays on the Tuesday the 10th and Wednesday the 11th, that no MLS league games should have been scheduled. But unfortunately, it has been, and that's why they've made this 10th through the 18th situation happen. And that's my one negative about this.
Yeah, I mean, you're not really going to find too many people happy about it. And I myself am not a huge fan of that scheduling situation. Unfortunately, we've seen it in the past where, on a different level where we had, MLS games, also being scheduled, also coinciding with a lot of World Cup games, in the past. And, it is what it is. And it's just something that, the teams are just going to have to deal with. I know that Ziggy Schmidt is not a huge fan of that either. And from what I've read, and, those, unfortunately, are the breaks, though, whenever you do have You know, whenever you do have a tournament that it also coincides with the World Cup, and you know, hopefully it doesn't take away from the tournament itself. I would hope that that somehow there is a way for these MLS sides to kind of field a strong side, in that, you know, managers and coaches aren't treating it like, you know, like it's just another warm up for their rookies and their reserves. But you know, it's a very real possibility, and it's an unfortunate possibility. But you know, let's hope that doesn't really put too much of a damper on the tournament.
Absolutely. Brian, listen, thank you very much. And don't forget, everyone, if you're curious to know more, not just the New England Revolution MLS, but any of the clubs in the New England area, Brian O'Connell, and let's also not forget Sean Donahue. They both run New England Soccer Today. Brian, thanks a lot. Hope to have you back on again to recap some of these Open Cup games. And have a good night, and thanks for the help.
Thanks, Dan. Look forward to it.
Thank you very much. Brian O'Connell, once again from New England Soccer Today, joining me on the show. Once again, the U.S. Open Cup begins Wednesday, May 7th, round one. Go to ussoccer.com for their Open Cup segment in the website, or thecup.us, run by Josh Hakala. And don't forget, U.S. Open Cup review shows, once again, will be on the Fridays after rounds proper will be done. We will have probably an abbreviated round four review show during the World Cup at a late time, probably for a short period of time, for an hour, so we'll see what happens then. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget U.S. Open Cup coverage here on the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show on blogtalkradio.com. Of course, just continue to come to the website and take a look when it will be. May 7th is round one. May 14th is round two. And then they're going to take a break in between rounds two and three, and then three and four. Once again, round two will be on May 13th and May 14th. There'll be one match, and that'll be the Portland Timbers under 23 side against the USL Pros Arizona United. Round three will be on Wednesday, May 28th. Round two winners will face each other, as well as the eight NASL teams. Round four will be the winners of round three, taking on the MLS teams. Round five now created to become the round of 16. The quarter, that'll be Tuesday, June 24th, and Wednesday, June 25th, depending on which days they'll be used. Quarterfinals on July 8th and or July 9th. Semifinals on August 12th and or August 13th. And, of course, the Open Cup final on either September 30th, a Tuesday, or October 1st, a Wednesday. So that should be great and interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, my next guest, once again, taped interview, cannot join me live. He writes for Fox Sports over on the inside MLS section of the soccer section of the website. So please head on over to read some of the stuff. Joining me, of course, is Leander Shalakins in a taped interview on his article about New York City FC's playing at Yankee Stadium, not in a soccer-specific stadium.
Daniel Feuerstein here. Once again, the American Soccer Show. Very pleased to have on with me gentlemen from the Fox Sports family on the website, the Inside MLS section of soccer, Leander Shalakins. Leander, thank you for the time, and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dan. How are you?
Very good. Things are fine. So, I was very intrigued with your article about New York City FC playing at Yankee Stadium. Some saying the first 3 years. The Yankees in the press conference said it won't be 3 years. It'll be till they find a home. Why do you believe that this is not a good setup for this new team coming in 2015?
Well, it starts with a question that I have, and that's, why does it have to be now? Why do we have to rush this thing? If the point of the second MLS team in New York is to really get it right and to put a team in the city, in the five boroughs, as they have said again and again, even though Yankee president Randy Levine is already kind of backtracking on that, if the idea is to put a team in the city, why did this whole thing have to be rushed so that now we're putting a team in a baseball stadium whose outfield is really very tight and isn't going to fit a soccer field properly? So that's my first reservation. You only get, you know, a short amount of time to convince your budding fan base that what you're doing is something that's worth their money and worth their time. And by once again going back to this old MLS problem of putting a soccer stadium, of basically squatting a non-soccer stadium for soccer games, you're not really making a very good first impression on these fans. Yankee Stadium clearly is not designed by any means to play soccer in, even though it does seem to be part of the business model now with the summer friendlies and such. But it's just not an ideal situation for a whole host of reasons.
Yeah, I will have to agree with you there. It doesn't look like it will be a good fit. There'll be a lot of problems, especially with certain sections being closed off in the new ballpark. And, of course, in the past, a long time ago, the NASL was around as the First Division League. The Cosmos played in the original Yankee Stadium. But, of course, back then, soccer wasn't as popular as it is now.
Yeah, no, that's true. They did play there. And I do think they'll draw, and it seems they've made a pretty good start of selling season tickets. But it's not so much getting fans into that stadium, I don't think, because there will be the novelty factor with that team. I think what's problematic is getting them to come back. And hopefully by the time that they do have their stadium, that they haven't put so many people off that they've sort of lost interest in coming to that team. That's what sort of worries me most. And then, of course, there's the logistics of sharing a stadium with a baseball team who will have a postseason and who will need that grass in the outfield to be in good shape so that it doesn't take bad hops on grounders in the outfield. And, of course, that whose season overlaps with that of Major League Soccer, which, given that it's going to take 3 days or 2.5, they said, in a pinch, to turn this baseball stadium into a soccer stadium, and then another 2.5 to 3 to turn it back, this is going to make for some seriously complicated scheduling. And you can't help but predict and wonder and worry that is going to always pretty much affect the soccer team negatively when there is a conflict.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget when the original Montreal Expos moved to Washington, D.C. to become the Washington Nationals. Obviously, the stadium wasn't built right away. They were playing at RFK Stadium, sharing it with D.C. United. And, of course, the pitching mound had to be removed for the Nationals so D.C. United didn't have to worry about running into it.
Yeah, and that's kind of a sticking point here because when soccer has been played at Yankee Stadium, they have done so laying the field over the pitching mound. So they basically had to tear down the pitching mound and then rebuild it for baseball. In the renderings that New York City FC had at their press conference, the field was laid sort of just beside the pitching mound. And they said that they found a way to sort of fit it in without having to level it. Nevertheless, it'll only be a yard or two at most outside the playing field, so they do have to take it down. What they say they're going to do is they're going to put it on a base so that it basically they can cart it away and then reattach it before a baseball game, a process that will take a day to take it down and another day to put it back up too, although they can do that sort of in the time that it takes to rebuild the stadium for baseball and soccer respectively. But I've spoken to players in the past who played at RFK when they had the mound there that they were tearing down, and they said it just wasn't a good situation. When there was just grass sod laid over the infield, you know, it's rootless. It doesn't really take to the field in those few days, and nor should it, because otherwise you couldn't turn it back into baseball. And, you know, those guys have always said it doesn't make for very good playing. You can feel the difference. So even if the mound isn't an issue, having this temporary grass laid over dirt, you know, it's not. You wonder if it's going to hold a player if he's sliding or if he's you know turning when he puts all his weight on it. You kind of worry about injury there as well.
Absolutely, Leander. I definitely agree with that. I really believe that right now the league has been pushing this. They've been pushing this. And they really had no, I would have to say, they would just, you know, they have no patience. I mean, I don't think right now is the right time for a second New York City team. I mean, I could be wrong. It might be a success. But to find a space in this city to build that second soccer stadium, they should have taken their time with this.
I agree with you entirely. And this is what I wrote in that column for Inside MLS, is that I don't understand why this round of expansion had to happen so fast. Atlanta is going to have a soccer team, but it's going to play in a stadium that was basically designed for football, and that's going to be back to the old MLS 1.0 situation that we still have in New England with the Revolution, where the soccer team is a secondary tenant. Orlando City does have its stadium deal in order, but they're going to spend the first year playing in some other facility. New York City FC is getting a team and has no stadium or even a stadium plan. They're still looking at venues, in fact. And Miami has been promised a team, even though they seem very far from even having a viable stadium plan. So, you know, we were told in recent years that needing a stadium both planned and funded and ideally built was bedrock to being awarded an MLS team. That was a lesson that MLS had learned the hard way from all the teams that failed or that took a long time to really get off the ground early on in the league's history. And now suddenly, in this rush to expand with all these huge expansion fees becoming available to them, that's kind of gone by the wayside. And I worry about that. And I really wonder what the rush is all of a sudden, because the league is growing and expanding and getting better and stronger. So, you know, these investment opportunities, these influxes of cash from these expansion fees, I think they're still going to be there in 2 or 3 years. But you could do this round of expansion the right way. I just don't understand where the fire is.
I agree with you. I think MLS is rushing. I think whatever plans they have, they should have at least postponed them up until a certain time. And I think right now, I think right now we're going to have an uneven number of teams competing in these next couple of years till 2017 comes along with Miami and Atlanta, depending on if Miami does get a stadium. And finally, I don't know if you've read this article, but apparently the Orange County Commissioner down in Orlando is not happy that the only way Orlando City goes to Major League Soccer is if they have a soccer stadium plan, and they saw what happened with Atlanta and Arthur Blank. He gets it because apparently they're going to build a brand new football stadium and fit soccer in there. Do you see that as a problem as well? Because to me, Orlando should have been number 20 in the first place.
Yeah, it seems like now all of a sudden there's a double standard or a triple standard, where if you're one city, you absolutely need the stadium. If you're another city, it's okay to share the stadium with a football team. If you're New York, you can play in a baseball stadium and kind of figure the whole stadium deal out later. And if you're David Beckham, then, well, whatever, you know, if you find a stadium at some point, great. So the standards, like I say, seem to be slipping a little bit here. And that is a concern because, you know, you have to be consistent with these things and you have to apply these philosophies in the way that they were intended and consistently, because, again, you've got a few stadium situations now that are tenuous. And if we've learned anything in the history of MLS, is that a stadium is everything.
Absolutely. You can read Leander Charlatan's columns in the Inside MLS section of Fox Sports Soccer, foxsports.com/soccer. Go to the USA tab and click on Inside MLS. You can read Leander Charlatan as well as Kyle McCarthy. Leander, thank you for the time. I appreciate it, and have a good day.
My pleasure. You too.
And once again, it's Leander Charlatan over at Fox Sports. .com/soccer. Go once again to the USA tab for Inside MLS. You can read his articles as well as Kyle J. McCarthy and everyone else that is involved with MLS and everything in soccer on foxsports.com. And now it's time for the NESL segment as we go ahead and take a look at American soccer, the NESL. As we move on here, talk about everything going on with the NASL. And once again, this is, as we see here, round three finished in the spring season of the North American Soccer League. And here are the games that were played over that week. The New York Cosmos suffering their first loss of the spring season at home against the San Antonio Scorpions. It was an early goal in the 15th minute by Eric Hasley, the former Toronto FC Vancouver Whitecap and FC Dallas man, as he stays in Texas and helps the Scorpions score the goal, the only goal of the match, and that would be the first loss of the spring season for the New York Cosmos. Final score, New York Cosmos 0, San Antonio Scorpions 1. It goes over to Canada as the Ottawa Fury get their first win of the season as they take out the Carolina Railhawks by a final of 4-0. It would be Olivier Minatel who gets a brace, gets the first goal of the game in the 34th minute. He gets his brace in the 72nd late. And then it's Philippe Davies in the start of the second half, makes it 2-0 with his goal in the 56th minute. Sadly for the Railhawks, they get on the board due to an own goal. Zach Schalowski puts the ball into his own net and gives Ottawa the 3-0 lead in the 62nd minute, and that would be the end of that, as once again Minatel got his brace in the 72nd minute. Final score, once again, Ottawa Fury 4, Carolina Railhawks 0. The Fort Lauderdale Strikers, they get their second win of the season as they beat the Indy 11 by a final of 3-2. Martin Nunez makes it 1-0 early in the 7th minute, but Cleberson for Indianapolis, he pulls one back to level the match in the 26th minute, and that half it would be 1-1. But then Fort Lauderdale, they go on an attack late in the second half. Fafa Picault in the 69th minute makes it 2-1 Fort Lauderdale. Marius Ebers makes it 3-1 Fort Lauderdale in the 73rd minute. Eric Norales pulls another one back to make it 3-2, and that would be the end of that. The Indy 11 so far in 3 matches, they've earned their first loss of the season. They haven't won yet, with only the first 2 draws to start the spring season. Final score, Fort Lauderdale Strikers 3, the Indy 11 2. And then, of course, the match that some of you saw on the ESPN 3 game of the week, Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting Eric Winalda's Atlanta Silverbacks. It was Atlanta winning this one by a final of 3-1. Junior Sandoval puts the Silverbacks on the board first in the 7th minute. Tampa Bay at home equalizes 8 minutes later. Georgie Herstoff makes it 1-1. Jamie Chavez makes it 2-1 Atlanta in the 27th minute. But after halftime, Dion McCauley, the third goal of the match in the 51st minute, and that would be the end of that. It ends with a road win for the Silverbacks over in St. Petersburg. Final score, Tampa Bay Rowdies 1, Atlanta Silverbacks 3. And then the Minnesota United FC hosting FC Edmonton, it would be 1-0. It would be late. Simone Broccolello makes it 1-0 in the 70th minute. And that is all Minnesota United needed to jump the table to top. And final score of this one, Minnesota United FC 1, FC Edmonton 0. And as we've said before, as we go to the standings in second division here in the spring season, Minnesota United leading the top of the table. They are undefeated right now, 3 consecutive victories for 9 points. With a +4 differential, the New York Cosmos in second place, tied for second with 2 other teams. You've got the Fort Lauderdale Strikers also with 6, San Antonio Scorpions also with 6. But the Cosmos have a +4 on the differential, so that's why they're in second. Fort Lauderdale has scored 6 goals, even though they're level on the differential. San Antonio scored 3 goals. They're level on the differential, so that's why Fort Lauderdale's in third with +6, and San Antonio with a +3 on the goals scored section of the standings. Carolina Railhawks in fifth place with 4 points with a minus one differential. Ottawa Fury, their first win of the season, 3 points with a plus one. Atlanta Silverbacks also with 3 points, but they have a minus three on the differential, so they're in seventh. Indy 11, so far, no wins, two draws and a loss with a minus one. They lead with 2 points. Tampa Bay Rowdies are in ninth with 2 points as well. They're at the minus two on the differential. And then last place right now, FC Edmonton with no wins, one draw, two losses for a point. They have scored one. They've allowed three with a minus two. So that is the standing so far in the spring season of the NASL 2014 season. And don't forget, more to come as we talk here, as we get ready for the next round of games in the North American Soccer League. And this will be on the weekend of Saturday, May the 3rd. Here is your schedule. The Atlanta Silverbacks hosting the Ottawa Fury over at Silverbacks Park. That starts at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Carolina Railhawks hosting the New York Cosmos at the Wake Med Soccer Park. That is also a 7:30 p.m. Eastern start time. Minnesota United hosting the Indy 11 at the National Sports Center Stadium. That's at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central time. San Antonio Scorpions hosting the Tampa Bay Rowdies over at Toyota Field, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central start time. And, of course, finally, FC Edmonton hosting the Fort Lauderdale Strikers at Clark Stadium, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Mountain start time. And if any of you want to read up everything on second division soccer in the U.S., NASL.com, as we always try to catch everything over there. And you have to say that if you want to try to watch some of these NASL matches live, go to NASL.com, sign up for their streaming service, and hopefully everything should be fine, as the NASL, of course, you have to say, with the second division, you just have to say that everything going on is absolutely fantastic. And as before we move forward here and get ready to talk about the Red Bulls, obviously, in their hour, I think some of you know what's going on here in the U.S. of what happened with Mr. Donald Sterling, the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, when he made those comments. And let me just say this. I applaud the NBA for doing a great job of taking care of business. They took care of business by giving a lifetime ban to the Clippers owner, and obviously they're going to force him to sell the club to the Clippers to someone else. But what does this have to do with And it points to FIFA, it points to UEFA, and at the same time, it just points to the situation of how you handle racism. How you handle racism in professional sports. And you know what? You just have to say right now, FIFA has done a poor job of it. I think UEFA has done a poor job of it. Now, we haven't seen anything that goes on in CONCACAF, and thankfully, I mean, I haven't seen anything in MLS, obviously. And if there has been something, but, you know, it hasn't been reported, then I cannot go with what has not been reported. The truth is this. I hope and pray it never comes into MLS. And if it has, we don't know about it. Certain chance, maybe. No one's told me anything. So I cannot say definitively if I have heard, seen, or report or read on what's been reported. But the truth is this, is that we saw what happened to Jozy Altidore. We've seen what's been going on with him when he was playing with AZ Alkmaar during a Dutch Cup match against a certain opponent. It's just been that type of situation where you're happy that right now it's not here. And all I can say is that I hope it continues on, that this stuff does not happen. I only hope this will continue on, that it will never happen here in MLS or in CONCACAF. But the truth is this, FIFA still needs to deliver more punishment to those countries, as well as pushing on those clubs that have those supporters that do racist chants. It's been shown around the web, especially on Twitter, what Dani Alves did when Barcelona was playing against Villarreal. The banana was thrown on the field. But boy, what an answer. Picks it up, bite out of it, basically telling them, yeah, you can't bother me. This is what I think about what you did. Great job by him. Great job by him. So all I can say is this. Is that Daniel Silver has made it quite clear, basically, it's just really, really clear that the NBA has made sure that they will nip anything like this in the bud, and they will be very, very clear that none of this is going to happen. Will FIFA ever be clear about this? Will the clubs in Europe be clear about this? Should there be harder sanctions on the clubs? Very simple. Very, very simple. Because I'm telling you right now, if we're going to end this thing worldwide, FIFA, you have to give more and harder sanctions. And it has to be done. It really, really has to be done. I'm telling you right now. It's just ridiculous. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And we're not talking about empty stadiums. I mean, that's nothing. I mean, there should be a heavy fine. I think supporters that get involved in these things, they should not be allowed into the stadiums. I know they're going to buy the gear. I think they should be allowed to stay at home. Don't go anywhere near the stadiums. I think that's what should be done, if it's possible. And if it's not possible, then you know what? I only hope that tougher sanctions will be shown, tougher sanctions will be given, and then we can all go home knowing or feel better knowing that these situations have been dealt with the right way. Because I feel, as always, we know this is a business. And that's the one thing I think we keep forgetting. For the love of the game is true, but I think we've seen the game come on the negative side when money is truly involved. So all I can say is there's nothing much we can do, nothing much we can say. I just think right now it's one of those things that that we hope that everything will be okay when we move forward from this sort of shenanigans. And now we're going to move on to the Red Bull Hour here on the 40 Seats Fire American Soccer Show. Thank you for listening to the show tonight. 1-1 draw against the Columbus Crew. I thought the Red Bulls played a very good road game. I thought the Red Bulls actually played strong. Right now, the Red Bulls are looking very solid. And all you can say is that they almost had plenty of opportunities. And all I can say is that it's looking pretty good so far. You know, I understood, you know, the first six games, it didn't look all right. They had an opportunity to get their first win of the season. It became a draw at home against Colorado. And then, of course, they had an opportunity to get their first win this season in Montreal. And then a goal in the second half. They took a point away, even though it looked like that they were able to do things in that game. DC United beats them 1-0. And all I can say is, after that terrible game in the second half where, yeah, they created chances, nothing went inside the net or over the net or off the post. Let me just say this right now. It's amazing what happens when you feel that you sense things are getting closer and then all of a sudden the next two games are at home and they get 6 points. They go on the road in Columbus, and they do get a big road point. They get a big, big road point. And who's the man that all of a sudden in 1 week just brings down the house? In 1 week. And that, my friends, is Bradley Wright Phillips. He has been sensational. He's tried his hardest to go out there to be the strike partner with Thierry Henry. Of course, you know, it's tough being the strike partner with Thierry Henry because he likes to drop back into the midfield to bring the ball up. He wants to create. He wants to go out there, and he wants to try to help the team as much as he can. Of course, me being the guy that always says, don't go back into the midfield to try and create something. You should try to find a way. Try to find a way to just fight hard, get into position, get some service, and then try to put it past the keeper. The last time I talked to you about Bradley Wright Phillips, I said basically he's got a thing. Scoring goals, making chances into, and basically he comes up with another gem. Great cross from Lloyd Sam on the right side. Great cross finding a wide open Bradley Wright Phillips who comes in. And, of course, give credit to Kosuke Kimura for making a dummy run, distracting one of the defenders as Lloyd Sam makes the cross, and that ball gets past the keeper off the inside of the near post and in. This has been, I have to say, this has been an excellent, excellent opportunity for Bradley Wright Phillips to take advantage of. This has been an excellent opportunity for the Red Bulls to take advantage . And all I can say is Bradley Wright Phillips is going to be that young player of the future for this club when Thierry Henry does decide to hang it up. Will there be another experienced forward that probably would like to come over? Yeah, probably. But I'm telling you right now, Bradley Wright Phillips is proving that he can make it in this league. Bradley Wright Phillips right now, Player of the Week in Major League Soccer. Congratulations to him, and congratulations on how he'll go forward in this season. Do you know how many times I think we've said this before? How many times have we said, if you are a supporter of this club from the beginning in 1996 of the Metro Stars up to this point, you want to see the younger players get an opportunity, whether they come from the super draft through the colleges or through the academy that the Red Bulls have right now. And at the moment, you have Matt Miazga, Connor Lade from the academy doing well and contributing. You remember those former players that used to be on this team, like a Brad Davis, drafted by the Metro Stars, and then all of a sudden they traded him away or they released him. And even though Houston, as you know, Houston has had Brad Davis for a long time. And what he has done for the Dynamo, you know, you still feel kind of, I wouldn't say robbed, because basically it was thrown away. Kerry Savagnin became a very good defender for Kansas City. Michael Bradley, of course, no longer with the Metro Stars, as, of course, he went away to Europe. But still, when you have these young, talented players on the team, Ricardo Clark is another one, of course, with Houston. You just can't seem to keep those big players that you've brought over or homegrown, and they move forward on to other teams, and you do very well. It hurts. It really does hurt when you see teams throw away something like that, and it just does not seem to register at all anymore. All I can say is it's just been one of those things that needs to be fixed, that needs to be taken care of, so to speak. And it looks like they've done that. Bradley Wright Phillips, Lloyd Sam. Oh, sure. They didn't play for any Premier League team. You know, they were in the lower levels, and then all of a sudden they come here and they're big time. Well, you know what it means? It means that we got the opportunity, the Red Bulls, to have these players come in and do a job. They fit in with Petke's system. Petke has done well. And the truth of the matter is this. The truth of the matter is that Mike Petke so far has done well talking about, or at least not talking about, but bringing in players that he knows that he can trust to go out there and to do a job for him. You know, Eric Alexander has also been one of those types of players. We've let him have it. I've let him have it. It's just one of those opportunities that goes away. And it's just one of those moments where you thought, okay, Petke's relying too much on Eric Alexander. And then we see a great performance from him against Philadelphia, bringing up the ball against Houston. And another great performance in Columbus. So maybe it's a confidence issue. Maybe it's a confidence issue by Eric Alexander. It's just one of those things where, hey, boy, I gotta say. Just gotta say that this is one of those things where everyone keeps going the way they go. It should be a lot better. It should be a lot better. And maybe the Red Bulls will keep on winning. Let me tell you something. You go 0-4-2. Four, of course, of the draws, two of them. And then you turn around going 2-1-0 in the next three. Five draws, two losses, two wins, the 500 average there, still though. Now you're back in the hunt. Now you're back in the hunt in the Eastern Conference. Columbus is ahead by a point. That's true. They got 12. But if you look, at the standings right now in MLS and the Eastern Conference, Kansas City right now, 11 points, second place. DC United, 11 points, third place. We don't know how long that's going to last. New England Revolution in fourth, 11 points. Red Bulls, 11 points. These are the five teams right now in the playoff picture. And it's only been between 6 to 9 games played already between these two teams, or these 10 teams in the East, I should say. Toronto, off to a good start, has now leveled off. They're in sixth below the playoff line. Houston's in seventh. They've only won two. Philadelphia in eighth, Montreal in ninth, Chicago in tenth. What the heck's going on in Chicago? It's just been unbelievable what's been going on here. It's just been unbelievable what's been going on with this team or these teams in the Eastern Conference. And all I can say, yeah, I know, still early. But once again, everything is right in the world because the Red Bulls earned 7 points in their last three games. So we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen down the road. And, of course, their next game will be in Frisco, down outside of Dallas, as they take on FC Dallas at FC Dallas Stadium, unless that's changed already. And, of course, we all know about the changing of venues, names, as everyone knows about Gerald Winfield, no longer called that, now Providence Park. But once again, we're going to have to see what's going on here. And it's just one of those things where, hey, oh, now it's called Toyota Stadium, so I had to double-check that. So there we go. But as we see so far, that's what we got in front of us. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, the situation is as follows. The Red Bulls, if they just keep on playing strong, they should be able to get to the top spot in the East. So we'll have to wait and see what's going on there, and we'll have to wait and see how it's going to be done, if it is done the way it is. So all I can say is, as I'm getting bombarded by phone calls all over the place, because people keep forgetting I'm doing a show, so I can't really answer their calls. The Red Bulls back in the swing of things in the pack. Let's talk about Kosuke Kimura, shall we? Kosuke Kimura has done a fantastic job filling in the right back spot for the Red Bulls. Because with the injury to Richard Eckersley, and I understand what people are saying, it looks like early on this signing is not what the Red Bulls probably had in mind. This signing right now is not in favor for the Red Bulls. Because he has conceded two penalties, allowed Vancouver to rip him apart, and because of the injury against Chivas USA, I'm telling you right now, many are probably thinking, thank goodness he's not back on the field. All I can say is this, is that for him and for the club, when the summer transfer window comes along, I think it would be much better for the club to transfer him away from his side, away from this Red Bull team, or maybe if he wants to go back to England or to the UK, they'll probably send him over there. Because even though he's hurt, and right now you're probably going to need him for depth at the moment, Kosuke Kimura, in my opinion, is the right back for this club. He's a lot tougher, a lot better. And I know he gave up the penalty, fifth penalty given up by the club. I don't know. What is considered a penalty these days? Because Justin Miram, in my mind, he drew a penalty. He kicked up his heels. He didn't get shoved down. He kicked up his heels while Kimura put a hand on him. Kimura, yeah, he held him. I mean, it didn't look like a hold. It looked like his hand was on Miram's shoulder. But once again, it's just another penalty, fourth game in a row, where the Red Bulls get called for a penalty against Columbus. I mean, I just find it really, really interesting how these officials consider what's a real penalty and what's not a real penalty. So all I can say is it's just one of those things where, hey, if that is what you're looking at, if that's what you think is going on, then fine, it's a penalty. But in my eyes, I didn't think it was. But once again, I think Kimura has done a great job in filling in for Richard Eckersley. In my opinion, Eckersley should just come off the substitutes bench and not play 90 minutes. Because, to be honest, I think Eckersley is the – Toronto FC showed you why Eckersley was expendable. But you never know. He could change. Eckersley could change, and he could find a way to get back into the swing of things. But as of right now, I don't see it. And if he's just going to come back, I think Mike Petke should just use him for depth purposes. Because he's got to find a way to make sure he doesn't foul his men or the guy he marks in the area, because it's going to be a penalty again. And I find it interesting. Is it really a case of the defense not paying attention to what's going on in the area? Or is it a case of, are the officials told, call anything and everything on the Red Bulls if there's a foul in the area? Because that's what it looks like to me. I don't know. I have to wait and see, of course. Not so much you have to wait and see, but we're going to have to find out why. Why are the Red Bulls being whistled for 5 penalties? 5 penalties. And they were given 2. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's a big mystery to me. But going back on Kimura, I think he's done very well. I think he's looked strong. And I think we're finally seeing this team starting to gel the way it should. Going out and attacking them, going out and doing a job. And if they keep on doing stuff like this, I'll tell you right now. I'll tell you right now. This is going to be one of those types of games, or this type of season, that the Red Bulls are going to move forward and probably just have a good season, and who knows, maybe there will be another trophy in line for the Red Bulls if it's not the Supporters' Shield. But obviously, there's still plenty of games to go, and let's not forget, there is also an Open Cup to be won. So let's wait and see what's going to happen here as the season moves forward. And once again, the back line. I think Armando has done a pretty good job up to this point of not overdoing it. Obviously, the fouling, hard. I think he's calmed that down a little bit. I think right now he's doing pretty well. Olave's a beast as always. And I also believe that Sakaya has done a good job too. So basically, we'll wait and see what happens. We'll wait and see how these things turn up. But I think Armando has turned the corner a little bit. I think Armando and Sakaya matching up with Olave has been absolutely fantastic. Because the veteran in MLS is just a beast, and he's done a great job, to be honest. He's done a great job to go out there, and I believe that the back line is going to get better. If you want to say right back is an issue, at the moment I will say no, but there is an opportunity. The truth is, it could happen, but we have to wait and see how these things are going to go. So as of right now, I think right back is not an issue. It could be an issue if something slips up. We don't know when it's going to happen, but hopefully it won't happen. And hopefully everything will be just fine going forward. Was it the best game for Peggy Lou Yandula? Absolutely not. I think we're seeing what happens when you got to play those two games within a week. And you're going to have to really start exercising caution as well as how to manage your starting 11. And I think this is where Eric Alexander is going to have to come in here when you get to the U.S. Open Cup games, when you get to the CONCACAF Champions League games in the group stage. You are really going to need your jack of all trades in the midfield to give rest to Lou Yandula as the creative midfielder. Maybe to Lloyd Sam on the right bat, on the right side of the midfield, on the wing. Maybe even to Johnny Steele on the left side of the wing. But boy, oh boy, oh boy, let me tell you something. This is going to be unbelievable when we get to these types of games, because I'm telling you right now, it's going to be interesting when you use this depth. It's going to be really, really interesting when you're using this depth, because the Red Bulls really, really are going to need this sort of situation when they move forward into the season.
And all I can say is, everyone, is this. All I can say is that with this team, sorry, I had to fix that little situation there, but once again, with this team, you have to fix what's going on here when it comes to the injuries and the depth issue. Because I'm telling you right now, when we get this, or when they get this situation done, it's going to be big time for the Red Bulls. And, of course, the major questions are going to be, well, what about when we get to the MLS Cup playoffs? Well, we'll see what happens then. But as of right now, so far, it looks like they've gotten their act together. Obviously, we're waiting for Tim Cahill to come back from injury, as he was ready to go in the game against Columbus. But I'll tell you right now, this is going to be an exciting thing moving forward when we have this opportunity coming towards us, when we get to the Open Cup games and the CONCACAF Champions League games. Now I want to get to Roy Miller for a moment. And I know some of you who are probably Roy Miller haters, you're probably thinking, how is it that all of a sudden he's having a great season? How is it all of a sudden he's having a turnaround season? Because when he was playing for Hans Bakke outside of his first year in 2010, you know, he looked slow. He looked like he didn't want to be there. Yeah, he can bring the ball up. Yeah, he can cross it. But he just can't find a way to shoot it on net. A lot of defensive gaffes, plays very slow, doesn't look like a 90-minute guy. And, amazingly, he's a national team player for Costa Rica. What's happened to him? What's with the changes? What is with the changes with Roy Miller that somehow turning out a great season in 2014? Well, I'll tell you what happened. Mike Petke got to his head. Mike Petke, after the blow-up in Buckshaw last year, where he said he intentionally encroached so that the keeper, or shall we say not the keeper, but Wondolowski, if he missed or if he scored a goal, that he would be retaken. But, of course,
if Wondolowski scored that goal, that meant basically that it would have been retaken anyway. So what did Mike Petke do? Mike Petke basically had a conversation with him and told him, flat out, you can't do this anymore. You can't do this anymore. You cannot just all of a sudden explode and have a mental meltdown like this. And you can't, you know, you can't lose 3 points or a point on the road when you have a mental meltdown. So what happened? Roy Miller took it to heart. Mike Petke gave him a couple games off. He allowed him to go play for his national team. He got his head screwed on right in 2013. He went out and he played. He went out and he played in this season, last season, this season, and he's been an absolute changed person. And that's all because of Mike Petke. I think while Hans Backe did a good job tactically with this team to start off the 2010 season, I think the one problem he had, I don't think he's the type of coach that probably handled the egos the right way. He didn't know how to handle the egos the right way, and basically the players did whatever they wanted to do. I mean, if Roy Miller had a problem, he didn't care. If Roy Miller was costing goals, costing points, Backe just said, okay, let's just close up shop and let's just worry about the next game. I don't think he took care of the situation the right way. And the truth is that, the stuff in the locker room reflected it. And then here's Mike Petke as the interim head coach, all of a sudden forced to become the head coach. And what has he done right now? He's challenged players, Mike Petke. He's found ways to get the respect from these players. And let's be honest, the biggest ego on the team is no other than Thierry Henry. And to do what he did in that training field scuffle, Petke and Henry having words, and boy, oh boy, let me tell you something. When you're going against a world-class striker in heated words, and you're able to get the respect not just from the players, not just from the league, and not just from the supporters, but from Henry, to say, listen, we're going to bury the hatchet, I'm going to do this, I'm going to not let you play in the first half of the match, I'm going to sub you in, because I know at the end of the day, I need you to go out there and I need you to perform at your highest level. And what did Petke do? And what did Henry do? Shook on it, moved forward, and had the biggest turnaround this club has ever had. After a terrible, terrible loss last season, at then the Home Depot Center against Chivas USA, this club came out of the blue and went on to win the Supporters' Shield. And no one expected that to happen. I'll be honest with you. I never expected that to happen. I thought right off the bat, I thought that they're going to make the playoffs. But to be honest with you, I never thought they were going to win the Shield. That's the truth of the matter. I never thought they were going to make the playoffs. I really thought that they were going to win the Shield.
I really thought that they, sorry about that, more problems there, but got that fixed. But that's what I really thought. I thought that they were going to make the playoffs, but they weren't going to win the Shield. And boy, oh boy, I'm glad I was proven wrong. I was very, very glad that I was proven wrong. It's just one of those things where I believe it's going to happen, that maybe this team, unfortunately with slow starts, they're going to have to find a way to improve themselves and have a better start to seasons. But one thing is for sure. One thing is for sure is that this team has the ability now to go forward and they can go ahead and do a job. That is for sure. And I'm telling you right now, I really believe that the Red Bulls have another great opportunity this season, that they're going to go out and they're going to do something great. And that's the truth of the matter. And look at what Pecky has done so far. He's backed his players. If he says that they had a terrible game and it's all on him, then he, you know, he puts it on his own shoulders. When it executes to perfection, he puts it, you know, he says, "No, the players did a great job," and all these other things, you know, it's all the players. And the game against DC United, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he felt that, that they could have won it. It didn't happen. He felt that they could have won it. And you know what? They, you know, they were able to go out there and do a job, and they couldn't, you know, and they went back home against Philadelphia, and they were able to take a 2-1 victory and add on to it with a 4-0 victory against Houston the next week. And then this past Saturday, 1-1 draw for 7 points. That's all I can say. They did a great job. They did a great job of doing well. All I can say is that it's just been fantastic. All I can say, it's just been fantastic, and everything is all right, you know. So all you can say is it's been a great job so far these last three games, and we'll have to wait and see what goes on next this upcoming Sunday down in Frisco against FC Dallas at Toyota Park. So we'll have to wait and see what's going on. And that is the Red Bull Hour at the moment, and we got some time here left. Apparently, it's come to my attention from certain players that some of these fans of a team that has not come into the league yet and that's, of course, those teams, the fans of this New York City FC have been visiting the local places of Red Bulls fans, and they've been trolling them. And, you know, while I'm not saying these fans of New York City FC should not be celebrating, you know, look, you're getting your team next year. You're playing in a baseball stadium. That's fine. But you've got nothing to say in the first place because you haven't kicked the ball off yet. And unfortunately, you're trying to start hooliganism. And my question is simple. Are you really trying to start trouble? Are you intentionally starting to try to start trouble? And why? Why are you? Because that's not what being a supporter is all about. Being a supporter is about concentrating on your own team. Now, if you want to say, oh, here we come because we play in the city and all that other stuff, the point is you don't have your own stadium. You don't have your own stadium. Just as Leander Charlatan said in my in this show, we're going back to MLS 1.0 if we're going to remain playing games, sharing facilities with these teams that are not in the same sport. And the only reason why it works in Seattle is simple, because there's an understanding between the two teams and the different sports. There's a fan base that truly cares. There's a fan base that has shown true support over in Seattle. Meanwhile, where has this support been for this made-up team? All because all of a sudden the commissioner wanted it, that you've popped up out of the blue? You know, I have had Sean Reed, who's created the Love Thy Soccer book that's coming out soon, and being originally from the Bronx and being a New Yorker, the truth of the matter is that my parents and their friends and the people that bought stuff in their hardware store when they owned the business, you know, they showed me what real hard work is all about. And I was always told, when you're a New Yorker, you always are the best. You demand the best. You don't take guff from anyone. And you're mentally tough from start to finish. And just because you don't know where the PATH train is that goes into Harrison, or take the Jersey Transit train from New York Penn Station to Newark and then transfer to the PATH train at Harrison, all of a sudden, you don't want to go to a Red Bulls game, or I guess you don't want to go to a Cosmos game because it's all the way out in Long Island. Where has that mental toughness gone to? Now, granted, I was born in 1973. I've been through the 80s and the 90s. It's not like how it is today. And I can understand that. But where has this mental toughness gone to? We're New Yorkers. Yeah, we complain. Yeah, we dictate. Yeah, we do this. We do that. We know. We're the best. We're boisterous. We're all this sort of stuff. But what happened to the mental toughness? Has it disappeared? Have we as New Yorkers decided to remain or become a bunch of whiners? We can complain about it. But just because you don't want to go all the way to New Jersey, to Harrison, to watch a soccer game. Where are they going to build the stadium for soccer in the five boroughs? You tell me where. MLS tried to force their way, to fishnagle their way into Queens when they found out they couldn't build it there because of the underground river. And now you're trying to give tax breaks to a sheik who has probably multi-trillion dollars because he owns Manchester City, that he thinks he's going to get a stadium for free? The sheik has enough money to build the damn stadium himself. Of course, he can't take away an inch of parkland behind the garage. Apparently, the GAL Corporation is not going to sell the land. And let me just say this. Isn't it funny? Isn't it funny? The borough president has all of a sudden said, I don't think it's a good idea. Why, Mr. Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz Jr.? Why, all of a sudden, when you lobbied for this, begged for this, you tried so hard to say, we can put it in any neighborhood in the Bronx. I think it would be better in the Soundview area or the area near the George Washington Bridge along the Major Deegan. You know full well there's no place to put a professional soccer stadium in our borough. The only way it's going to happen is if you take away Heritage Field, the site of the original Yankee Stadium. You take that away, you have your soccer stadium. And it's not going to happen because the neighborhood, the community is sick and tired of taking it up the rear end because all of a sudden the sheik wants to take away and more traffic is going to come with the cars. That ramp is part of the plan to be deleted off the Deegan coming from Yonkers, coming from Westchester County, coming from the Bronx in the northwest section just north of Fordham Road. You take away that ramp, it's over. Yeah, I know there's the subway. I know that there is the Metro North station now. But I'm telling you right now, how do you think the Yankee fans are going to feel? Your own Yankee fans are going to feel that don't want to take public transportation or take the Metro North to Yankee Stadium where they rather drive. Tell me. Tell me. Can you tell me? Let me tell you something, Borough President. You begged for this. You wanted this to happen. And then all of a sudden, now you're backing off. You know, the community has had enough. Have you had enough? Have you had enough all of a sudden? Or maybe you feel that you need to go out to maybe get a little bit more financial help, shall we say. I'm not assuming, but I'm wondering why all of a sudden you're lobbying Don Garber to remove the MLS to Queens motto and all of a sudden come to the Bronx. I just feel that there's a lot of shenanigans going on. We're not ready for this true NYC 2 situation. And then all of a sudden, here comes Don Garber making a tweet as he says he does not see three New York teams in Major League Soccer. Well, depending on who you talk to, Cosmos said no to MLS. The MLS said, MLS said no to the Cosmos. Look, the truth is that you knew that either way, either it was a test by Garber to see if they're going to get the $100 million from the Cosmos, or that the Cosmos were willing to shell out that money. So who did he go to? He went to a sheikh that has the money to give him what he wants. But here's my question to the Yankees. And let me just say right off the bat that I am a Yankee fan for baseball. I have always been a Yankee fan since I was born. My question is simple. My question is very, very simple. If you originally did not think Major League Soccer was going to do anything in this country, if you felt MLS is not worth your time, why all of a sudden the change of heart? Why all of a sudden you decided to be a 20% partner and you didn't pull out the $100 million yourselves? Randy Levine, I'm talking to you. I'm not talking to the Steinbrenner family. I'm talking to Randy Levine, the president of the Yankees. I'll say it. I think you're a snake oil salesman. I think you are a bastard. I think that you, because of you, throwing away Joe Torre the way you did, forcing the Steinbrenner family to spurn him the way that it was done, you, sir, have turned me off. While Hal and Hank Steinbrenner are running the Yankees, be honest, I think it's more Hal than Hank right now. But my beef is not with the Steinbrenner family. My beef is with you, sir. You, sir, Randy Levine, are pathetic, and you don't think of anything, do you? You just go ahead and do whatever you're going to do, and you're just going to turn all these things against the Yankees and the Yankee fans. Sick and tired of you, sir. Unfortunately, it looks like you're not going to be leaving anytime soon. And that is why, because of what you did, and you don't have the guts to say, hey, Hank, Hal, Hank, especially Hank, who's a soccer fan, I say we pony up the $100 million and we own this New York City soccer team that MLS wants to put in. And maybe I would applaud you a lot better if you did that yourself, but no. You ridiculed the league, you ridiculed the sport, Mr. Levine, and then all of a sudden, oh, wait, we'll get involved, but we won't get involved. As long as Man City runs this team, we don't have to run it. We'll just bring in the amount of money for the groundwork. Sure, we'll be the ones, when we set up the baseball deal with WFAN, that we will tell them you're going to have to broadcast New York City FC games as well. You strong-armed WFAN just to get NYC FC games on English language radio in New York? You know, this whole thing has been a shambles. And we haven't played a game yet. You're ramrodding this on everyone, and we haven't played a game yet. And it's just one of those things where I am just sick and tired of hearing about this is what needs to be done, this is a great thing, and what great thing has this been so far? Tell me. We have unknown supporters of this team harassing New York Red Bull supporters at Legends, possibly at other bars that are supporting the Red Bull supporters, to try to troll. Who knows? Maybe to start fights. And now they're being told not to go there anymore because they don't want these problems. We're going to have a soccer team playing in a baseball stadium. They're going to slice the mound off, put it to the side, and then they're going to repack it when the Yankees come back to play. Possibility of baseball playoffs. And here we have the president of the baseball team acting like a snake oil salesman because he thinks it's going to work. The money was there. The timing of it is wrong. And now you're going to see Orlando with the Orange County commissioner suing the league because Atlanta apparently is not going to create a stadium for the sport itself. Is there, outside of the supporters groups, is there real support coming for these teams? I don't know, because right now the only true support that's coming to an MLS side is the team in Orlando moving up from USL Pro into MLS. That's it. Orlando, the team that has been spurned by Commissioner Don Garber, is now upset after everything that's happened. They're upset because Atlanta is allowed to have a team in an NFL stadium. And it's not even proven if it's going to work right off the bat. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guests, Brian O'Connell from New England Soccer Today, Leander Sherlackins from Fox Sports in the soccer department of Inside MLS. I want to thank them for joining me today. As always, I want to thank you for joining me for the show. Once again, don't forget, the U.S. Open Cup is going to start this coming Wednesday, May 7th. Next Wednesday, I should say, on May 7th. Round one proper gets underway. Don't forget to join me for the Open Cup Round 1 review show next Friday. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening to me tonight. And as always, please, I beg of you to enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night and take care. Bye-bye for now.